Hello, and welcome to the Autonocast. I am Kirsten Korosek, and this week, joined as always by the fabulous Alex Roy and special guest Andy Cohen, who is co-CEO of Gensler. And if you haven't heard of Gensler, then there's something wrong with you, because it is one of the world's largest architecture and design firms. So you probably have been impacted in some way by one of their buildings. Either maybe you work in it, seen it, iconic building in your city. So Andy, welcome.
Kirsten, thanks so much. I'm thrilled to be able to do this podcast.
Great. So Alex, I'm going to let you kick off the first question, because I know we've been talking a lot for all of our listeners out there. You know, usually we have startup founders on and folks specifically within the autonomous vehicle space. So you might be wondering why we have someone in the design architecture space. And there's a reason why, because autonomous vehicles or any other kind of transportation impacts and shapes not only how we get around cities, but how cities are formed. So we wanted to have someone on who could really give their expertise on that. And Alex, do you want to kick some questions off just to get this conversation rolling?
Absolutely. I've just finished going through, looking at this vast presentation deck, Andy. I think it's 85 or 90 pages long, whose title is Game Changing Impacts of the Driverless Car. And I'm fascinated by this, especially with you, because almost everyone we talk to is under the age of 30 and filled with utopian visions of how these vehicles will be deployed. So to hear from you on the other side of the fence and the infrastructure side and the design side is very interesting. Could you tell us a little bit about how and why Gensler has embraced driverless cars and the changes that are coming?
Sure. Thanks, Alex. You know, this is the most profound time for an architect. I've been with my firm for 38 years, and I could tell you that this is the game-changing moment for architects and urban designers and planners based on the impact of the driverless car and the disruption that it's going to do and the positive impact it's going to have on the human life and human experience. About a year ago, the Urban Land Institute, which is a major force in the development community, approached me, because everyone about a year ago, as this started to gain traction, was looking at the driverless car from the technological standpoint, from the innovation standpoint. But no one was really looking at it from the humanistic standpoint, about the future of our cities, how this innovation can allow us to take our city streets back, to make cities vibrant and dynamic as they used to be, and not dominated by cars that cut off all the pedestrian circulation in cities. And so my firm, over the last year, and I've been out there on the speaking trail, has been focused on and done a lot of research on, and that's what this deck's about, sharing about what all this innovation's about and its impact on humans.
I can't help but notice that the first thing on the first slide says, the automobile as we know it, gasoline and diesel engine powered, will be largely obsolete by 2030. So on the spectrum of things we expect to happen among cars, you have electrification over internal combustion, connectivity, sharing, and autonomy. So just starting right off the bat, you're quite sure that electric vehicles are going to replace gasoline and diesel by 2030?
Yeah, again, I get to speak with a lot of the technology companies and car companies, and there's a race going on right now between these 75 to 80 companies for who's going to win the war, who's going to win this disruption for the driverless car. And what, we've been hearing over and over again, there's a lot of discussion on the schedule, whether it's 2030 or 2035. Somewhere in the next 10 to 15 years, the gasoline-powered engine, as we know it, will no longer be. If you think about it, the rideshare business, which is Uber and Lyft today, is only a small proportion, very small proportion, percentage of the entire motor vehicle business. That's cars and trucks and motorcycles. And by 20 to 2035, pretty much 90% of all car rides are projected to be ride-sharing, ride-sourcing. And so most people who own automobiles today are projected to not own automobiles, that you will take point-to-point service to go from one place to another in an electric car, not in a gasoline-powered car.
I live in New York City. So I look out the window and you know, I'm in, you know, downtown near Broadway, that we're going to see a major rebooting of city streets converted to pedestrian zones and a further reduction of lanes as we know them?
Absolutely. I mean, if you think about it, cars are only used 5% of the time. So 95% of the time, a car sits idle, parked on our city streets, parked in parking structures. And so what we see the opportunity is, if you think about a city like New York with all the parking next to the curbs, think about all that valuable real estate in New York or LA or any other city that's taken up by parking, and taking that space back for green space, pedestrian space, cafe space, ability to create sustainable places. So it really is an opportunity. It's really a real estate play in a lot of ways, because we can gain back all this real estate on our city streets. And frankly, because of the driverless car, we're going to be able to make our city streets for cars narrower and create much more sidewalk spaces for people.
So to what extent is Gensler, you know, because you're one of the largest companies in the sector, are you proactive in looking for clients and talking to cities about making these changes and getting ahead of these trends? And what are the timelines associated with a project that would, say, redesign and reorient city streets from cars to pedestrians? Is it a 5-year turnaround? Is it a 20-year turnaround?
Well, it's a great question, Alex. You know, for us as designers and urban planners, many times the projects we're working on today won't be implemented for another 7, 10, 12 years. So what we've been saying to our clients every day is, the projects we're working on right now are the projects of the future that will be for a driverless car society. And so we're telling our clients, we need to look at the projects we're designing today, whether it's an airport, whether it's a retail center, whether it's an office complex, or whether it's a whole district of a city. Designing it for the advent of this disruption is really, really important.
Sorry, I'm laughing because I'm going through the deck and I'm seeing some really beautiful slides of things I wished existed. I'm generally considered the skeptic and the cynic, even though I love tech.
Well, you're like a newly reformed skeptic. Alex is really the one who was just completely on board with all these ideas, but now is pushing back a little bit more, right? Is that more accurate?
Well, more like I like to see money invested, you know, where it's going to work. Mr. Cohen, I'd love to know, in the history of architecture, and you've been in the business a long time, so what are examples of major projects that re-envisioned, you know, urban transportation that succeeded, like on a broad citywide level? And what are examples of ones that did not succeed? Because, you know, if you look at some, there are some cities in China, mm-hmm. and there are certainly some big projects in Paris, mm-hmm. which worked and which didn't work. Tell us about that history.
It's great. You know, through our research, we've been researching what creates great places and spaces for people. And the finest places in the world are cities where entire networks have car-free areas. So from our research, you'll find that cities like Copenhagen are, you know, one of the highest rated cities in the world. Why? Because cars don't dominate the streets. Or on the other side of the coin, and we just finished the second tallest building in the world in Shanghai, 130 stories tall. It's called the Shanghai Tower. This new Pudong area of Shanghai is dominated by cars, by these 15-lane highways that surround these buildings. And all the pedestrians are on bridges above the street. And the best examples are cities where pedestrians are engaged on the street. So the example I always use all the time is New York. New York in the early 1900s, streets had, you know, vendors on them. They had people were playing on the streets. Kids were playing on the streets. People strolled on the streets. There were horse and buggy on the streets, but there weren't cars. The streets were the places where people gathered in our cities, and they were dynamic. There were restaurants and cafes. And so you look at the best examples around the world of cities that have pedestrian zones, and that's what potentially the future of the city of the future will be. So the example I use all the time is in New York, Times Square. And about 10 years ago, Times Square was transformed from a bus and taxi clogged urban environment, very crowded, to now it's a pedestrian zones where people gather at Times Square. It's become an iconic place for visitors that are visiting New York. And it's a people watching place. It's a people place. And people come back to these spaces over and over and over again as they're dynamic and the beating heart of a city. So we think it's really, really important to create these type of environments that is not cut off or dominated by cars and buses.
I notice in this deck, there's no real mention of, say, the electric scooters that are, you know, have captured the zeitgeist for the last 3 weeks in San Francisco. Was that a deliberate omission, or do you believe that that will become part of the mobility continuum?
It's absolutely part of the mobility. I mean, we're talking about driverless cars. We're still talking about it's trains, planes, and automobiles. It's still about all modes of transportation, including scooters. But it's the efficiency of being able to transverse our cities safely that matters the most. So, you know, we have lots of examples where you have driverless cars and trains and people and bike paths and cafes and scooters on our city streets for mobility to be able to move people easily and swiftly through our cities.
You know, to me, the hard thing about this is that we all imagine what the eventual, and I'm sure you've seen this certainly in design, where there's these growing pains that come with changing a cityscape. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering what you anticipate is going to happen as far as, like, let's take LA as an example. Mm-hmm. You know, congestion is a big issue there. There is mass transit, but there are still a ton of cars. People live outside of the city, but drive in. How do you see driverless cars? I mean, to me, it seems like there might be some problems caused by them, mm-hmm. and some extreme growing pains as we shift to this sort of more idyllic cityscape where we recapture our streets back. I mean, how do you, do you anticipate that happening?
You know, there's going to be huge gains from cars being able to drive eventually 2 and 3 feet apart. And if you take a city like Los Angeles, think about all the infrastructure and freeways that already exist and the ability to create efficiencies on our roadways. If you think about traffic is caused by accidents, right, which cause congestion and left-hand turns. And if we're able to eliminate 90% of the accidents with driverless cars, our cars will be able to much more fluidly drive on our freeways and streets, as well as I mentioned, left-hand turns. There's also for our cities, if you think about it, our cities are dominated by, let's say, gas stations. There are 125,000 gas stations in the United States. And just think, in the future, 10, 12, 15 years, you won't have to plug your cars anymore. You'll be able to discharge your battery and get another battery for your car. So all these gas stations, which are in prime real estate in the cities that we live in, can be converted into other uses. We recently we've been working with Reebok on the idea of taking these gas stations and making them health and wellness centers or green spaces or park spaces. But what an opportunity to take over, you know, this underutilized piece of property in every one of our cities. Or you take, for example, what I've been hearing from the different car companies, and there are a lot of competitors out there that are discussing how they're going to operate these things. What I'm hearing is that there'll be these centralized distribution facilities, whoever wins this war for the next driverless car. But you won't need dealerships anymore. People are not going to own cars. You think about all the dealerships that exist in cities, car washes, repair shops. This will all most probably be happening in centralized places, which will free up all this land area and real estate for other more positive uses for people in the cities that we live in.
I think the surprising thing about your view, which isn't the view itself isn't surprising, but and maybe it's because you are speaking to some of these automakers, but how quickly you think this is going to happen, because I just even think of the dealership model in and of itself. I mean, look at the headwinds that Tesla has to deal with, and that's just one company. I can't imagine, you know, how hard it will be for a company like GM or something to extract themselves away from that dealership model. I mean, it just seems like you're really bullish on the speed in which driverless vehicles will start changing cities. And do you think that's just based on your sort of gut and your inside information of talking to these automakers? Yeah. Or do you think it's going to be, yes, we'll get there, but really we're going to see it in cities first. The rest of the country is still going to be sort of more of a traditional model. And so we're not really going to see this complete revolution everywhere, just in the biggest cities of the US or globally.
Well, first, I'm really bullish, probably so because I sit on all these panels with all these experts from these car companies and technology firms. So they're much more bullish than I am, frankly. I'm being conservative when I say 15 years. Some of them are saying half that time.
Okay.
If you read the media and the papers every day, there's billions of dollars being spent on this. And it's a race for who's going to own the technology, especially LiDAR technology, which is lasers, on who's going to own that technology, who's going to come up with the best system, the most efficient system. And again, the amount of money being poured into this by every tech company, by every car company, it's a race and absolutely a dynamic race. The other thing is that the advent of the driverless car is going to come second. The question I get all the time, what's going to start this revolution? And what's going to start this revolution is deliveries, deliveries of goods, deliveries from stores and so forth. If you think about long haul deliveries, point to point service, I'm hearing from the experts that it's somewhere around 5 years. We already have had truck delivery already, driverless. A Budweiser truck drove about 100 miles outside Denver driverless. It's one of the reasons I'm hearing that Amazon bought Whole Foods was for a distribution route for everything that they want to deliver. And so, and if we look at what's happening with Amazon right now in deliveries, it's such a huge uptick in the amount of deliveries that are occurring. And the implications of that, and when I'm out there speaking about this, it's huge, is that if you think about it, there are 6 million truck drivers and taxi drivers out there. And just like Uber and Lyft have disrupted the taxi business, this is going to disrupt the delivery business. And I'm saying within 5 years, somewhere around 5 years, maybe a few years more, but somewhere in that time frame, that most truck deliveries will be driverless. And so this is a societal issue too. How are we going to retrain these 6 million jobs that exist today into other types of jobs?
I'm looking at, I guess this must be page 36 of your presentation, about the adaptive reuse of parking topologies.
Yes.
And as a New Yorker and as someone who's paid through the nose for a parking spot in Soho and suffered, I'm fascinated. I wasn't aware that there were so many different varieties of parking topologies. And I'm curious, you rate them in terms of optimization and repurposing. What is the variance, even rough variance, in terms of speed of cars in and out and maximized use of space between the best and worst parking topologies?
Well, most parking structures that are being created, you think about it, there are 500 million parking spaces in the United States, upwards of somewhere around 5 billion parking spaces in the world. And just think if we can capture that space, even 80% or 90% of that space for other uses. So we've been telling our clients, we studied the typologies of parking. And if you think about it, most parking structures have slope parking, and you use the ramps inside the parking to get from floor to floor. And what we've studied is the ability, if by creating an adaptive use of the parking structures that exist into other uses. In fact, we're doing that right now in several buildings. So we studied these parking topologies, and what came back was the best parking that we can do an adaptive reuse on is flat parking. So we're suggesting on any new parking that they're flat plates, they're poured flat, that we design them with a higher floor to floor to allow them to be, adapted later on. We're even designing buildings right now where the parking has facades on them, building elevations on them that look like the building above. So later on, you can retrofit it into other uses. And it's a very successful program because if you think about it, especially not so much in a city like New York, but a city like LA, where you have 3, 4, 5 levels of parking at the base of a building and then the office or retail or hotel, that you can later on, your future expansion could be that parking area. Secondarily is that we've really looked at the idea that, with there's so much issues around the United States of homelessness. And so we have been developing some strategies where you can take these underutilized parking structures and actually put digital, housing, either homeless housing or hotels or office space, to be able to plug into those structures as an adaptive use. And several cities are looking at this as a solution for homelessness right now.
You said that you are already actually designing or building parking structures like this. And is it all based on this forecast that driverless cars will change the need for parking structures the way they exist today? Or is there something else that you're also, is there another layer to this? Is there another thing coming that you're anticipating that will change, you know, the need for parking structures the way we know them today?
Well, cities like New York and San Francisco, as an example, don't encourage new parking on new buildings because they don't want to create more traffic and coming to their buildings. But cities like Los Angeles are still, the zoning codes are antiquated and we're still designing buildings with a lot of parking, you know, as part of the program. We've been looking at this as a way to solve the problem of how do you deal with all these parking that we're building today, continue to build today. What we've been telling our clients are, if you're going to build parking, do not build below grade parking, because it's easier to do an adaptive reuse for an above grade parking. Mm-hmm. For below grade parking, what can you put in that space?
Right.
There's just so many data centers or health clubs in the world with windowless space. So we've been encouraging our clients to put above grade parking. Think about other types of buildings like airports, which we design, and think about all the parking that exists, say at LAX or other airports, where the whole infield is parking structures. And what we've been telling our clients is the future looks like massive amount of pickup and drop off areas, especially in a city like Los Angeles, where everyone drives to work and parks. Well, think about all those people now that are going to be dropped off, whether it's a retail center or an office building or an airport. We're suggesting that we have to design these buildings with a lot of pickup and drop off space. Mm-hmm. Or take the typical suburban mall that has a sea of parking around it. People won't be coming to that mall and park. They'll be coming there by driverless car. And so it's suggesting there'll be more green space, more pickup and drop off space. The other thing that our clients have been saying to us is, what's going to happen from all this parking revenue? Because a significant amount of revenue, somewhere of upwards of 10, 15, sometimes 20% of the revenue comes from parking for these buildings. Mm-hmm. And we're saying, in essence, you're going to be able to transfer that to having VVIP and VIP pickup and drop off space.
I would love to know what your thoughts are on a design solution for picking up and dropping off people. Because even today, when you come in from an airport, finding like a traditional human driven service, it is highly problematic in some airports. It is terrible. And you can never find the car you want. And if you start really adding numbers, you know, seeing the use of ride hailing services, driverless, for example, communication is going to be even more important than before. So I wonder how that's going to work.
Couldn't agree more. And by the way, take an airports, upwards in some airports, upwards to 30 to 40% of all the pickup and drop offs are now Uber and Lyft, which is radically changing all the patterns at airports. We've been working on some new innovative ways for creating pickup and drop off places in cities, or say around stadiums. When people let out of a stadium, where do you go to pick up your Uber or Lyft? We've been designing these interactive canopied spaces that sit on the city streets that are color coded and have digital screens and signs to be able to assign the Uber or Lyft into certain districts, depending on where your location you're going to. So you'll know you'll go to the red column or the yellow column or the blue column. We've been designing, they're very modern and futuristic. And it's a way of gathering all the people from different locations into the decentralized zones, whether it's in an airport or the city streets.
Tempe, Arizona, Uber crash. Mm-hmm. Many people have looked at Google Map images mm-hmm. of the landscape around the crash location. And, you know, people have talked about kind of car-centric urban design and pedestrian unfriendly, kind of like no man's land architecture. Mm-hmm. And so there's certainly a very anti-pedestrian architectural philosophy that's been implemented in, you know, cities. The further you go west, the more you see it, the more, you know, cars dominated the expansion of these cities. So have you seen an overhead view close up of the precise location of the Uber crash?
I have.
And so when I refer to the pedestrian walkway through the median, the X-shaped walkway, it's a brick walkway through the median, which has signage facing out, suggesting that pedestrians should not cross there. You know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yes.
We look at urban landscapes like New York and LA, and the deck reflects all kinds of improvements one could make mm-hmm. in favor of driverless cars. But, you know, to what extent does your company have relationships with cities on a policy level, whereby they may go out and make changes that to address that problem. Because there's an interrelationship between the homeless populations and how driverless cars will be able to function.
It's a great question. And first of all, the recent accident is an important one, and it's a sad one, but I will tell you that just like any other innovation that has been created over the last century, the car companies are going to solve it. They're already working on it. And again, billions and billions of dollars being spent on that. Cities of the future right now, and the cities that we're talking to, I'm out there on the speaking trail every day, they're waking up. And I got to give different cities credit that they're starting to just right now. I would say it's just the beginning of this revolution of changing zoning codes, of changing the impacts of the driverless car on society. And so I think it's just starting, legislation's just starting to happen. About half our states now have driverless car legislation. I speak often about the impediments to the driverless car, and there are many, and people like to glom onto these. And obviously legislation, the state, county, city planning, zoning codes are going to have to radically change. There's this whole issue. I'm just going to open this up a little further. There's this whole issue around cybersecurity, and think about all the hacking and things that we've seen in the media every single day. We're going to have to deal with cybersecurity. Who's going to control all the systems around this? We're definitely going to have to deal with insurance. So if there's only two or three winners out of all these 85 to 100 companies, there'll probably be two or three winners, and they'll be paying most of the insurance for these cars, not people. So the entire insurance industry is going to radically change. It's a $200 billion industry that's going to completely shift. And then you brought up, Eric, the issue of safety. And clearly safety is going to be, and the codes and the legislation that has to happen around it is absolutely immense. And then finally, I want to bring up the real positive one, and there's going to have to be new codes written around it, but environmental. If you think about it, 95% of the CO2 emissions we can probably solve that are clogging our city streets right now with cars. And so that's a real positive one that's coming on us, all the green strategies around driverless cars. So those are the big buckets that we're seeing out there. But the biggest one probably of all is legislative. And our governing bodies, our city governments are going to have to develop this in the next couple of years. These legislations got to change. In a way, we get to recreate our cities. And I think that's what's making this so damn exciting for urban planners, designers of all types, because now our city streets, especially for and freeways and so forth, especially for the cities that were based on it, like the city of Los Angeles, can now go back in and recreate the future, the Sim City of the future. We can now create more of, as I mentioned from the start, this humanistic approach, all about the human experience and not just about the car experience, and not just avoiding cars, but creating great gathering places for people.
So correcting some of the errors maybe that have been made in the past, or over-reliance or in embracing of cars over people.
Absolutely. Yeah, look, the saddest part is that now other cities around the world, new cities that are being developed or developed around the car. I was mentioning Shanghai as an example. A whole new section of Shanghai was developed around the car. And I think now we can reverse this trend and show the world, whether it's developed in the U.S. or Asia or Europe, we can show the world what the future can be. We're creating dynamic, wonderful cities of the future.
Hey, one last thing, what you just said is interesting, because I also see this possibility of us creating whole new problems, which is then embracing driverless or autonomous vehicle technology so much that we then shift it to the other extreme, which is shaping and changing our cities around cars, but a driverless car. And so I wonder what your thoughts are on like the role of things like mass transit, because depending on who you talk to, some feel very strongly that like driverless cars are going to kill mass transit, whereas others say, no, there's a place for it. And it's really about delivering more people to that. I mean, in the design world, is there, and in this future that you see, do you see a place for mass transit, or do you see the driverless car model sort of replacing that?
I get that question all the time, and I think it's both. I think we're going to have mass transit, we're going to have trains, which move people very efficiently. But I do also think, and I've been speaking about this idea of the last mile, mm-hmm. the first and last mile, and that is even today, 25 is the example in San Francisco. 25% of the Uber and Lyft rides are from mass transit stations. So people are combining the use with mass transit trains and driverless cars of the future. If you think about it, you'll be able to take a train and then take a car for that last mile. So I think this only enhances the use of mass transit. I should also say that we're working on a lot, many transit-oriented developments, meaning that they're mixed-use, vibrant developments around train stations. And that, too, is much about the future of our cities because people want that dynamic mixed use of live, work, and play.
No, thank you for coming on. I'm really, is there anything else that, as far as that you're seeing, as far as even like the way that the size and shape of buildings, we talked a lot about, so the pickup and drop off, mm-hmm. parking structures, mm-hmm. are there other elements that maybe of a building or where they're placed on a street mm-hmm. that maybe unless you're in the design and architecture community, you wouldn't even think of that will be changed maybe slowly or maybe very quickly as a result of this shift to new transportation?
It's a great question. I think that the lobbies of buildings, whatever type of building it is, and we're designing them right now, lobbies are now going to be the interchange, the place to be, because everyone that's coming to that building, and I'll use New York as the example, because most people coming into a building in New York are coming through the front door. Well, in most other American cities, people don't come through the front door. They come through the parking structure. And so the ability to use the lobby as the beacon, as the gateway, as a great, if it's a workplace of the future or a retail store, the lobby now becomes that great meeting place. And it's going to change the shape of a lot of our cities because, you know, the lobby will become the center, the mecca, the meeting point for any building that's designed in the future.
Great. Alex, did you have any other questions?
Yeah, but it's going to take an hour for him to answer. But how about quick fun answer. Okay. Omitted from this sure. wonderful presentation. And I agree with you. I think that you're more bearish than a lot of the industry experts you spend time with. And I think that you're right because these people are not serious and that you are. And which is why I have to ask, no reference here to things like Hyperloop, Elon Musk, Boring Company, or flying cars. Mm-hmm. So, deliberate omission you'd like to comment on or wait and see?
Our firm has been focused on a driverless car and its impacts. Clearly, there's a driverless taxis. The Hyperloop there are many, many other modes of transportation that are being studied right now, Hyperloop being a major innovation. We've been focused on the driverless car and its mm-hmm. innovations.
That's a very diplomatic answer. I expected no less from you, Mr. Powell. Well, if you ever want to have a drink and tell me the rest, you know where to find it. All right. So if we want to learn more about Gensler, online, what is the best place, worst place to go and read up about you and where you'll be speaking and the company?
Well, our website at Gensler, getgensler.com. And you can see all our innovations, all our great projects, and a lot of our design thinking is right there on the website. And you can plug into me at andy_gensler.com.
Well, that's very generous. And on Twitter?
Alexis has my call letters there.
We'll put it into the blog post. Kirsten, what are you working on next, and where can we find out about you?
The May issue of Fortune Magazine is out now, so I have an article about the legal implications of autonomous vehicles uh-huh. and what will happen. So that's sort of an interesting look at what will happen. So the short answer is it depends. But and how it's going to impact insurance companies and things like that. And
exactly.
That's done. The other story I am working on, aside from my regular Tesla coverage and things like that, I cannot talk about right now. But eventually I will be able to. So look forward to that one.
That's great. That's super.
And I'm writing a book about the effect of SimCity and Railroad Tycoon on a generation of architects and designers and the total economic loss resulting from that.
I love it.
I'm joking, but I wish I was writing that. I'm Alex Roy, 144 on all platforms. Thank you so much, Andy Cohen of Gensler. It was really great to have you on.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.